President-elect Donald Trump is sentenced in his hush money case.
The protections afforded the office of the president are not a mitigating factor. They do not reduce the seriousness of the crime or justify its commission in any way.
What does it mean as he prepares to assume the office of the presidency?
In terms of practically speaking, this will likely have no effect on his ability to execute the duties of Commander-in-Chief and acting as President of the United States.
Today is Friday, January 10th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
After careful analysis, in obedience to governing mandates and pursuant to the rule of law, this court has determined that the only lawful sentence that permits entry of a judgment of conviction without encroaching upon the highest office in the land is an unconditional discharge.
President-elect Donald Trump was sentenced Friday to no punishment at all in his hush money case, an outcome that cements his historic conviction while letting him return to the White House unencumbered by the threat of a jail term or a fine.
With Trump appearing by video from his Florida estate, the sentence quietly capped an extraordinary trial rife with moments unthinkable in the U.S. only a few years ago. Trump and his attorneys argued it was a politically motivated case that should never have been brought.
It's been a political witch hunt. It was done to damage my reputation so that I'd lose the election, and obviously that didn't work. And the people of our country got to see this firsthand because they watched the case in your courtroom. They got to see this firsthand, and then they voted, and I won and got the largest number of votes by far of any Republican candidate in history. And won, as you know, all seven swing states, won conclusively all seven swing states, and won the popular vote by millions and millions of votes. And they've been watching your trial, so they understood it.
It was the first criminal prosecution of a former U.S. president and major presidential candidate. Let's get more on this now from VOA's senior Washington correspondent, Carolyn Prasuti.
A surreal scene in a New York courtroom. The president-elect speaking virtually to the judge, claiming innocence, calling the case a political witch hunt intended to make him lose the November election. Minutes later, Judge Juan Merchan sentencing Donald Trump to an unconditional discharge, meaning the guilty verdict stands, but Trump receives no jail time, fine, or probation. The judge telling Trump he was not treated any differently than any other defendant. President-elect Donald Trump will now become the first president in U.S. history to take office as a convicted felon. He was found guilty last year of 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide hush money payments to a porn star. Trump has indicated he plans to appeal the verdict.
This was a disgrace.
Political analysts like Shannon Bo O'Brien of the University of Texas say this case was personal to Trump.
He doesn't like to admit fault. He doesn't like to admit weaknesses or shortcomings.
New York Supreme Court Judge Juan Merchan, who presided over the trial, had denied a delay, but also said he would not sentence the former president to jail. Gary Rose teaches politics at Sacred Heart University.
I think the message that really is conveyed here is that no one is above the law, and that the process has played out, and it's going to now bring it's going to bring it to an end.
In a second and third case, a Trump-appointed judge this week temporarily blocked the Justice Department from releasing final reports from special counsel Jack Smith. The cases, both dismissed, involved the storage of classified documents and election interference with the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. This week, the president-elect reiterated his belief that Smith was appointed illegally.
He was thrown off the case in disgrace. Why should he be allowed to write a fake report? It'll only be a fake report.
Special counsels are required to file summary reports. The U.S. Attorney General said he would release Smith's report on the January 6th uprising at the Capitol. Making that public could hamper Trump's efforts to pardon those arrested. Again, Professor O'Brien.
If a lot of this comes to light, that a lot of this was planned and a lot of this, these activities were malicious and they were criminal, he is giving people a free pass on criminal activity.
The fourth case deals with Georgia election interference. The prosecutor was removed due to an improper romantic relationship with an employee. So the case is at a standstill until it is dismissed or until another prosecutor is assigned. Again, Professor Rose.
I think the voters are actually hoping that this whole thing is brought to an end and that now we can begin anew with a second Trump term.
And that term starts on Monday, January 20th.
It feels great.
Carolyn Prasutti, VOA News.
And joining us now to explain all of this is Mark Sedlander, a trial attorney and litigator whose practice consists of white-collar defense and government investigations.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
So tell us what happened today. Just run us through the technical aspect.
Well, a defendant in a criminal case, in this case, President-elect Trump, was sentenced following a unanimous jury verdict in a criminal case in New York State Court. He was sentenced to what is called the very rare sentence, in fact, of an unconditional discharge, meaning his sentence is basically discharged without his having to do anything. Oftentimes, in certain circumstances, in somewhat unusual cases, a judge will impose, let's say, a probationary sentence or a sentence of the requirement to pay back some amount of money to the victims, after which time the sentence would be discharged. In this case, the judge discharged the case without President-elect Trump having to do anything. So that's why they call it an unconditional discharge. There are no conditions, and basically his sentence is over.
Why do you believe, since there was no real sentence, that the judge decided to go forward with this sentencing? And is this a first?
Well, I'll take those in reverse order. Certainly a first. We now have a convicted and sentenced felon about to assume the presidency. In terms of why the judge decided to proceed, many colleagues of mine and myself included would love to have been in chambers while the judge was probably deciding what to do in this unprecedented case. I would imagine that, and I'm just speculating here, that the desire was to have some sort of finality to the sentence rather than keeping it open and waiting until after President-elect Trump leaves office, perhaps 4 years from now, that the judge wanted to have some finality, finish the case, impose the sentence. But the main reason likely why, I mean, it's an unusual situation in that there are, in our country, certain restrictions that judges have to consider when it comes to imposing a sentence on someone who's going to be the president in a couple of weeks. So I think likely the sentence was imposed because the judge wanted some finality to the case, but the type of sentence was imposed, which was the unconditional discharge, which is about as lenient as it gets, especially for a felony, is because the defendant in this case is about to be the president of the United States.
Well, this was a low-level felony, right? It's not unusual for a first-time offender in a case like this not to get jail time.
I'm glad you brought that up. It is not unusual for, in white-collar cases, for a person who has not been convicted of a prior crime to get a sentence that does not include jail time. It is also common for people convicted of felonies in similar circumstances to get some relatively low amount of jail time, let's say in a number of months and less than a year. But that is usually for extraordinary, I don't want to say extraordinary circumstances, but relatively unusual circumstances. So let's say a person who is genuinely deeply remorseful, rehabilitated after committing the offense, first-time offender with an upbringing from an underserved community for whom this behavior was completely out of character, and who, for example, had already paid back the victims in full before sentencing, in addition to volunteer work for victims, similarly situated victims. If a person had come before a court with that type of background and asked for a sentence with no jail time, I could see how that would be a relatively normal sentence. In this case, President-elect Trump seems to be the opposite of that type of defendant. He has showing no remorse. In fact, my understanding is at the sentencing hearing today, he maintains his innocence despite the unanimous jury verdict convicting him on many felony counts. So it's extremely unusual for a defendant like President-elect Trump, who has behaved in a way that is very in the face of a conviction. The saving grace for him, of course, is his being elected to the presidency.
And will it impact his presidency in any way, or stifle his ability to perform all of the duties necessary in the role?
In a political sense, I'm not really the expert on that. It seems to have gone both ways. His convictions gone both ways in terms of helping or hurting him. In terms of practically speaking, this will likely have no effect on his ability to execute the duties of Commander-in-Chief and acting as President of the United States, because there are no conditions. This was the unconditional discharge. He's not being supervised by a probation officer, which is normal for what is called a conditional discharge. Generally, the default number of years for a felony conviction in New York State is 3 years of a conditional discharge, and that oftentimes will include the conditions of being supervised by some officer, or at a minimum, not committing additional crimes. So he has no restrictions. His sentence has already been discharged. So this likely will have no effect on his ability to execute the duties as he needs to.
And he can still, and is still, as I understand it, appealing the conviction itself.
Yes, perhaps. And that's entirely standard, and he has every right to do that. And oftentimes, when, in fact, usually when people are convicted after trial, they will exhaust appeals in the event that there were any issues in the trial court. That is a defendant's right, and it's standard. Especially in his case, he actually has a interesting issue. After the United States Supreme Court's immunity decision, there are interesting issues in his case that I think likely should be reviewed by appeals courts, and I'll be keeping a close eye on those as they proceed.
Like, give us an example.
Well, after the United States Supreme Court, in my opinion, shockingly came out with their immunity decision, essentially saying that a president of the United States is largely immune from prosecution for crimes committed in many circumstances while in office. One of the aspects of that immunity decision was to say that certain evidence, as it was an official act of the president while he or she is in office, cannot even be admitted as evidence in the trial court. Now, the New York State court for which President-elect Trump was just sentenced, that trial occurred before the United States Supreme Court immunity decision. So at the time, most Americans, and for most of our country's history, assumed that presidents were not immune from criminal prosecution or conviction in almost any sense. So a lot of evidence was admitted during that New York State trial that likely would not have been admitted after the United States Supreme Court immunity decision. So the question is, was that evidence admitted improperly because it shouldn't have been admitted now under the new immunity decision? And if it was admitted improperly, would that have changed the outcome of the trial in the New York State criminal case? And if so, the President-elect Trump has an argument about that.
Interesting. Thanks. As always, in everything involved with President-elect Trump, complicated and unclear.
It is. Well, I look forward to seeing how this plays out. But it seems like there's been, for the most part, an end to this case. And we'll see what comes up next.
Mark, right.
thanks
so,
so
much.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mark Sedlander, a trial attorney and litigator whose practice consists of white-collar defense and government investigations.
You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA in Washington and across the globe, thank you so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you soon.